I don't know what else you want to know.
This is cassette two, there's continuation with Helen and Francis Johnson, Moline, Illinois. Cassette two, side one. When your father now constructed and made a drawing for this house, mm-hmm. how did it differ then from other houses 15 or 20 or 30 years older? You said they still had an outhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And but you had a bathtub at that time when they
yeah, house. Well now we when the old houses moved back there, otherwise we took a bath in we had a little out kitchen, I mean a little hallway.
We leaned to
where we yeah, something like that, where they kept a bathtub that we took a bath in. And they had to heat the water on the stove. And Mother had a kerosene stove out there that she could cook on when it was too hot to have a coal stove burning in the summertime. And we had a coal stove in the living room. And the upstairs wasn't heated, but I think there was a register that let a little heat go up. And Mother told about how they would get up at 4 o'clock. You see, they had certain days to do things, and Monday was wash day. That was customary in those days. And so they'd get up at 4 o'clock, and Dad would turn the wheel on the washing machine and the wringer and things while she was getting the other washing done. And they had a copper boiler that they thought they had to boil clothes in, you know, sheets and towels and things.
So you were small girls, they had a washing machine.
Yeah, but not electric then.
They turned it by hand.
They turned it by hand. And they get up at 4 o'clock and get that washing done before Dad went to work. Then Mother could get us kids up. See?
It was a long day then.
Yes, it was. Uh-huh.
So most of the houses then had this procedure around.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They all washed on Monday.
And they all
and then they ironed on Tuesday and did mending on things. And then, I don't know, Saturday they baked for the weekend. And Mother would bake 6 great big loaves of bread 3 times a week. For and besides maybe other things, you know, but I mean, she always had those.
Was there rye bread or wheat?
It was wheat.
Wheat.
But during World War I, we had to take some other kinds of grain, and I don't know what kind they were, but they made the bread all ugly looking, and Mother said, we can't eat that, so she, but you had to get the white flour, you had to take the other. We had, I don't know what kind of grain it was, but it made it kind of purplish brown, and it was, and she said, that was terrible. I suppose it was all right to eat, but she didn't like the looks of it. Mother was a good cook. And when she, I know...
We'd come home from school and have a great big slice of her homemade bread.
Bread and butter.
At lunch. You went home for lunch then every day?
No. Well, from elementary school. But not from... Yeah, from high school, because we gave up our our lunch. Our study period. We gave up our study period so we could have 2 periods for lunch. So we walked home and back. That's why we're still healthy.
A mile. So mm-hmm. we walked 4 miles a day.
Mm-hmm. In all kinds of weather. In all kinds of weather.
Now the kids are carried mm-hmm. and taken in cars.
Yeah.
Dropped off. That's why they aren't as healthy.
So then you had a big slice of bread, and was there wheat, you said, or rye? You never had
usually
rye.
Wheat.
With homemade uh-huh. jelly or something on uh-huh. it, you know, before Dad came home from work. And then we'd have that right after he got home from school, and then we could have supper an hour or two later, you see.
And then we always had, in the winter, we always had a barrel of apples in the basement. They called them cellars then because they weren't finished the way they are now. And things kept cool down there, and Mother had all her canned goods down there, and they stored potatoes for the winter and things like that down there.
Was there a cellar under the old house when he moved?
Yeah.
There was
when
a cellar?
When they moved back there, then it was cemented and they had
so
a bathroom down there.
They moved the whole house down the back
yeah.
there
yeah. Mm-hmm.
and started digging down it.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Then they had plumbing facilities back mm-hmm. there mm-hmm. before this was built, mm-hmm. while this was being built.
Because this was in the process for about 2 years because Dad was doing so much work himself, you see. Mm-hmm. And when he was out of work, he'd work here.
So who dug the basement for him?
Oh, he had to hire that type of thing.
Right?
Uh-huh. And electrical work and plumbing work and things like that.
So then they put in the...
And he had help erecting the tuba for the frame, but he did all the cabinet work and the laying of the floors and things. Mm-hmm.
And we moved into it in the spring of 1916.
1916. Mm-hmm. And then you had the bathtub and the shower also?
No, not a shower
not
then.
A shower.
No. We built a second... Oh, you said, was this like the houses? This is typical of the houses that were being built then, a big square house because it was the most economical. You could have your all your downstairs and then four bedrooms and bath upstairs. And then he was going to build a pantry because they a lot of them had pantries in. And we had a sink in the pantry and a lot of cabinets. And Mother said, oh, I'd rather have a sewing room, because she sewed for all us kids, even for the boys, you know. And their suits had to be, their little Russian blouses and knickers had to be starched and ironed, mind you. Now they throw all these wash and dry things in the washer and that's it. But that's what she had to do. It was a 24-hour job, practically, taking care of a family.
But there was never any ironing done the same day you washed. How did you?
No,
You had to wet it on and you had to iron it.
Well, then they had to hang them out to dry, and then they'd sprinkle them and put them in a basket to iron the next day.
Because then the moisture would circulate through them when they
and make them just right for ironing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And everything was ironed, and towels,
and linens, clothes. And she loved to iron. And later on, when the boys had to wear white shirts, she'd have as many as 12 shirts in
to
the
iron.
To iron. And but she said, I loved to iron shirts, and I didn't. And linens, linen tablecloths and napkins, she loved to iron.
Anyway, to go back to the pantry, that's the sewing room. Dad said you can have both the pantry and the sewing room, so that was it.
So he made that little room for her sewing room.
And then later on, we've got that as a closet, and we cut a door between that room, you can see it, and made another complete bath back there.
That was when Mother had arthritis so bad, when she was older.
It was done before. I mean...
No, she had arthritis before her heart attack, it was. And we thought that she'd only have to go upstairs at night and not have to go up in the daytime if we had a bathroom down here. And so we wanted to do that. And she didn't want us to because she didn't want her sewing room spoiled. And we didn't want it opening into the kitchen.
Was she still sewing at that time?
No, and then finally she said, I said, well, Mother, it won't do any good if you have to go into the kitchen, if you ever have to have use this for a bedroom. But, you know, she thought, and she said, oh, well, you can do what you please because I'm not sewing anymore anyway. I'd sew for her then.
And then front porches, you know, you'd have a big front porch with a porch swing at the end and chairs. Cretonne covers on them and you can sit out on the porch. Well, now you can't do that here.
With all the traffic, and it's no fun
so
out
I
there.
Thought, oh, I was here alone, living here alone then for quite a while. And I thought, oh, I'd like to take in part of that front porch and get rid of it. But I thought, oh, it's silly when I'm alone. But when Helen moved back here with her grand piano, stereo, and a whole library of her own, I said, we're going to do that. So we took out the triple windows in the front and extended out onto the porch. And they stuccoed the outside of it just like the rest of the house, so it looks like it was originally that way.
Oh, so there was an open porch there before?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We use it the way people do patios now, because there wasn't that traffic then. And the adults would stay out there, and when our uncle from Devonport would come over and his family, they'd come over in the summer evening, and we'd always sit out there. And at their house, we'd sit out on the porch, too. No air conditioning in those days, and
but
it was cooler.
It's grand the way it is
Yes,
now.
It is.
Mm-hmm. And then I was working on a hooked rug there, and I can leave it there. It's out of the way.
And
there were just triple windows there, you see, and all we did was take those out. Because they said it would spoil the structure of the house if you took the whole thing out.
I thought maybe they could take it clear out to the edge there. But he said if they started taking out the wall, it might they might get into structural problems. And so it works all right because I've got the bookcases over there, the ones that have records in.
Around the corner there.
And the big books.
So you inherited some ideas from your dad then?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Makes the drawings and...
She made this.
I made that in Colorado one time because I wanted some cabinets and I couldn't find the kind I wanted. So I went down to the high school and took woodworking classes.
And you built the whole thing yourself?
Well, the industrial arts teacher at the school where I was teaching showed me how to make the drawers. And in these drawers I bought at Montgomery Ward's and had to cut them down and add to them to fit.
Yes.
But I did all the structural things.
You brought them from Colorado Springs?
And then, yeah, and when I wrote to Frances, I said, shall I bring those home? And she said, why, of course, when you made them. But you know, when Dad came out there after I had made them, she said, I expected him to say, oh, did you really do that all by yourself, you know? But you know, he wasn't that anything. He came and he opened the doors and drawers and things. And then he said, well, you know, you should have beveled these doors. It'd be, and mother could see my crestfallen face. And she said, well, don't you think it's pretty good for her? And she he said, yes. But he said, I was just showing her how she could do better.
It was his honest opinion.
It's in six sections, so it can be taken apart.
Oh, and I'll have to tell about when they were older. How mother quilted, and see, those two love seats were mine, and I brought home. And she could put a quilting frame there, so it was out of the way. And she would quilt her own quilts. And her eyes were, before her eyes got so bad. And she'd have about half a dozen needles stuck here, a dozen. And Dad had real good eyesight. And he'd come and he'd thread all those needles, so she didn't have to stop to thread any needles. She'd pick one, and then he'd come to see how many were left unthreaded. And when she got down, she got down to one or two, he'd start threading all the needles again for her.
He had good eyesight.
Yeah, he didn't wear glasses regularly at all. He wore them finally to read.
Oh, did he?
But you can see here, he doesn't have any glasses on. And that's the way he looked most of the time.
Mm-hmm. He didn't look his age either.
Mm-mm. He's a good-looking man, isn't
yes.
he?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Very good. So, were the other houses going up at the same time then on this 23rd Avenue?
Beyond that, yeah. And across here, well, across here, they're more our vintage.
I see.
Because they began to go up first. And this was still a pasture across 14th Street, two houses here then. And then it was a pasture, and then beyond that, where Morgan Park is, that was all woods. And we'd go out there and roll down the hills in the leaves in the fall, you know, to hear them rustling.
Then we could take sleds and
yeah, in the winter.
Out there mm-hmm. and go
in
on
the
hills. It was really wonderful.
Was it hard times then during the First World War to get work for your dad, or?
I suppose. Well, no, it wasn't. They were building then and doing things for the war, because this house was built then, and a Swedish friend of his over here on 13th Street, because that was built up in there then, said, "Why don't you rent this one, and we could continue living there." And make a lot of money, not a lot, but I mean for those days, you know.
Make
uh-huh. And so Dad told Mother what he said, and Mother started to cry. And he said, don't worry, we won't do it. But you see, and so he told this other fellow, no, we won't. She said, she's looked forward to that house, and she couldn't let anybody else live in here.
So nobody else has ever lived up here except us.
So then we rented the little one during the
war. Mm-hmm. But it happened though, many families did that during the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
They rented a house off for 5-10 years. And
That's
a strange idea. You build something new for yourself and you rent it off to some stranger.
Uh-huh. But you can see Mother looked forward to this new home, just the way they wanted it at that time. And I can see that she wouldn't want to let anybody else come in here. Mm-hmm.
So, and then he continued to work as a carpenter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you went to high school and then on to...
And I went 2 years to Augustana.
Yeah.
And then I taught for 3 years to earn some money.
Here in the Quad Cities?
Yeah. And then I went to the University of Michigan and finished there in 1927. Then I graduated from high school in 1920 and went to Augie.
Youngest in her family. Youngest in her class. And valedictorian of her class.
Oh, I see.
Well, I don't know whether I was the youngest. I was among the youngest.
I said among the youngest.
And that's because I skipped a grade over at Garfield. Then I taught in Winnetka when I graduated from Michigan for 2 years, a suburb of Chicago, where I got to go in Chicago to the operas and the concerts and everything, you know, because I was so interested in music. I sang in a chorus in Michigan, and I got to go to all the concerts then and hear a lot then. So then I wanted to go. I thought my idea was to...
Where in Michigan did you teach?
I didn't teach
you
in Michigan.
Teach there,
no.
Only.
I signed a contract to teach history and French, I believe. And then I got this chance to go to Winnetka. And I thought that was a bigger opportunity. The other was a little town. And I wasn't sure. I hadn't been to France then, and I didn't think I should teach French without having been to France. So I had enough hours to teach it. So then I went to Winnetka, and my house mother in Michigan, I said, what'll I do when I got this notice to come? And I said, I've already signed this other contract. And she said, well, it's still 3 months before school begins in the fall, so if you get the other job, you can renege on that. So I did. Then I stayed there 2 years, and my idea was I wanted to travel so badly, and I didn't have money, so I was going to, and I thought when you live in a place, you get to know it better than as a tourist. So I thought that's the way I'll see the country. Now I'll go 2 years in every place. So I went out to Colorado then in 2 years and thought I'd stay 2 years. Well, by that time the Depression came. See, that was 1929, in the fall I went back. And my principal said, what do you want to change every 2 years? Because pretty soon, no matter how good your recommendations are, they'll say you don't stay long enough to contribute to the system. He said, why don't you do your traveling in the summer?
And you couldn't get any seniority or seniority.
Yeah, that's it. And I'm glad I stayed because my pension's real good now.
Did they count seniority years back, though?
Hmm?
Was there a big deal, seniority years back in the 20s? To be, stay in one place
yeah.
a bit long?
Yeah. Did they have tenure then? I don't know whether they had tenure then or not.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But anyway, well, I was happy there.
You didn't look there for us a tenure. You didn't want it.
No.
If you taught 2 years and you were satisfactory, then you were on tenure and you could have the job as long as you wanted to.
For today, 2 years only?
Today, mm-hmm. but, yeah, sort of probationary you are for your first 2 years. And then if you got your contract the third year, you could keep the job as long as you wanted to. Why, today it's terrible. They pink slip them and then maybe they'll hire them back. Even if they're on tenure, I think it's terrible.
Well, that's because they've been cutting down, you know, because of the lack of money. And if they don't notify them 3 months before school's out, they can't let them go. And so they have to notify them about March, you see, February or March.
That's why
so they call it pink slipping.
And then some of them get hired back again. Now, my grandniece who teaches the hearing impaired, she got a job here in Moline after she graduated from Illinois State and in that hearing impaired program. And each year she got pink slip. Even the third year she was on tenure. Well, she got this job down in Parsons, Kansas. And she says, I'm not going to monkey with Illinois anymore, because she'd spend her spring vacation running around seeing about a job again. And then they'd hire her back again. And that's no fun.
No. But then if she moves into another school district, or I mean another state, she loses her seniority though.
Yeah, but this is her third year down there, and she's never had any trouble. She's got her contract back without any trouble every year.
And they're good to her. They do everything.
And when they called her down there for an interview, why, they paid half her plane fare down there. They put her up for a night. And they fed her, and she visited the school the next day, and they took her back to the airplane. Why, it was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. They don't do it in Illinois.
Mm-mm.
Well,
she was up interviewing near Chicago one year, and they said, and she liked the setup there pretty well, but they called her home, and her father said she was up there being interviewed, and that was spring vacation, and that was several before she went to Kansas. And they said, oh, don't let her sign a contract. We're going to have enough pupils for two teachers. You see, the first year, she got, she knew it was only for 1 year because a woman who had it had a year's leave of absence for pregnancy. She was having a baby. So she knew that was for 1 year. But then they had enough. Then she was up interviewing, and they said, we're going to have enough for two teachers. So we're going to hire her back. And so she didn't pursue that anymore. And then the next year, the same thing happened. So finally, they were so good down there to her that she took it. And she's was a little homesick at first, but she's adjusted and does.
Mind you, she teaches the preschool mm-hmm. hearing impaired. Imagine.
And kindergarten now, too, I think.
Mm-hmm. In your case now, you also went to Augustana.
Mm-hmm. I went to Augustana 2 years. And by that time, I got a job. And then Helen was doing this traveling, and I had to go too. So we'd travel in the summertime, and then, so I got my last 2 years, mind you, I got some Augustana summer school, some night school, and I went 6 winters straight on Saturday classes out the University of Iowa and got my degree out there. But I didn't stop teaching then. I just kept on teaching and did it, Saturday classes while I was teaching in the wintertime. And,
well, she did that because when I was teaching in Winnetka, a couple of my friends there said, oh, they had a travel guild in Chicago, had a reasonable trip to Europe for 6 weeks. You had to go by boat then. And and it was for young people, professionals, you know, and college students who didn't have the money, but they wanted the grand tour. And so they said, didn't I want to go?
So Helen rode home.
Uh-huh. And I said, and so Frances rode back and said, oh, can I go too?
No.
Yeah. So she went. And by that time, this other friend, her grandmother got sick, and she didn't want to leave her mother alone with her. So she didn't go. So we went anyway on the trip. Mm-hmm. And that was in 1931.
During the Depression.
Mm-hmm. So after that, I didn't have enough money to go away to school and travel too. So I just got the rest of my education piecemeal.
Uh-huh. And you paid for your own education. You said you paid back...
I paid Dad back without any interest.
Uh-huh.
And I took out an insurance policy with a friend in the church. And Dad said, well, the least we could do would be bury you. You didn't have to do that. But I thought if I owed him money, I better take out an insurance policy. And here I am still living. But I didn't think it was fair for me to go to Michigan when I could have finished a doggie.
Well, see,
but I wanted the experience of being away at school.
In did Michigan, he insist on you going to doggie?
No.
It was your own idea to...
Yeah. The principal of our high school graduated from Michigan, and another friend, a lawyer, had graduated from the law school there, and it was supposed to be a very excellent university.
How much more did it cost you to go to the University of...
Well, I could go for $1,000 a year, including board and room then.
Oh, but how much was it?
And I got a scholarship my first year there.
Because she was valedictorian.
And the tuition itself wasn't very much, because I could live at home, see, and get my room and board for nothing.
Mm-hmm. But the
tuition, I think, for the whole year wasn't much over $100, maybe.
At Augustana.
Uh huh. And then your books weren't as expensive now. Gee, this Scott, that's going to Blackhawk, his books cost about $200 for one semester. Mm-hmm. Just it's Scott Community College.
Of course, people are making more money now. It's comparable.
But is it possible for a student like? In your days, you could work during the summer and pay for most of the tuition. Mm-hmm. But would it work today to pay for the tuition, for instance, it was Augustana, $8,000?
I worked on Saturday down at a department store because I was invited to a sorority up there, and I thought, well, I can earn that at least, you know.
$100
during
the summer.
Oh, no. Did I? I don't know. When I got to college, though, when I worked in the New York store in the office, I made more because I thought, well, now I've got to work. I can't stay home. In those days, the teenagers didn't get jobs the way they do now. And so I didn't work until I was at Augie, I guess, in college.
You mean it was hard to get a job?
Yeah, nobody, they just didn't get a job. No, well, you didn't try to get a job. Teenagers just stayed home and helped their mothers.
Annoying.
Yeah, they didn't. Now all the teenagers get jobs as soon as they can.
So they don't know how to iron anymore.
our Scott was at Kmart, and they heard something over the PA system about a job. He went to see about it when he was just barely 16, ready to start his junior year of high school. And he's had the job ever since, for his junior year and his senior year, and now he's 2 years at Blackhawk. He's had that part-time job at Kmart, and it's been wonderful.
And they pay him $4.25 an hour. That's more than the minimum wage. They even asked him if he wanted to learn how to be a manager. He said, no, I have to go to college.
No, that's necessary. So both of you then chose the teaching profession.
That was about the best thing, except secretary.
I wasn't interested in machine work, like typing and things. I was interested in dealing with people. I never regretted it. I wouldn't.
You spent how many years out in Colorado?
About 51. I retired when
teaching.
I was. No. I taught 36 years out there, and I taught 6 years before I went out. I guess.
So then you retired out there and lived.
And lived out there until I came back here now.
Yeah, she lived out several years after she retired. She retired 4 years before she had to.
But I lived out there, about 16 years, I guess, after I retired. So I had a good time out there, too. Yeah. But I worked then, even. They asked me when the curator of an historical house died, and they said, and somebody recommended me. They thought I might be good, and so I worked there, and I got what did I get the first year I was there? About $1.50 an hour? But I had read a lot, you know, about antiques anyway, and then I learned a lot, and I learned some from even the people that were in, who would add things, and I read more, so I learned a lot, and it was fun, and I gave a good tour because everybody said so. So I did that, and that was only open in the summer, and then in the spring and fall before it opened, sometimes we'd take school groups through that wanted to go. And then I house sat for people, and I earned money that way to travel too.
When they went on vacations, they don't want to leave their home without somebody.
No, nowadays you know why houses are broken into. So I did
that.
There
are different kind of vocations you can.
So I'm willing to do anything. And she says, no, well, you're offered a job. I'm not going out and look for a job. I said she ought to work in enough quarters to get Medicare, you know. And I've got Medicare, but she hasn't.
I pay for
the doctor part.
But I don't
but
have
not
hospitalization
the
and Medicare.
How many years did you teach them?
41.
41.
I taught.
Why did you have the Medicare?
I retired a couple years before I had to, but I've never worked under Social Security. So all I have is my teacher's pension and anything else I invested.
Why wasn't the Social Security?
Well, the teachers have their own pension.
And they cut
them
off.
They're not into Social Security.
Some states have both, and some states only have one. Mm-hmm. Colorado just had the teachers, and Illinois just had the teachers' pension. But Iowa had both.
She worked enough to get Medicare, because anybody born after 1902 couldn't get it unless you worked under Social Security.
And see, I was just a year, so I didn't have to work more than three quarters. And she'd have to work more because she was 19.5. She would have had to work nine quarters.
I could work
three quarters and travel another quarter, you see, and still make it. Oh, I've planned.
It was all planned. More or less, you have walked on water.
Yes. And now we can live comfortably and we don't have to worry about finances.
And here you have the hostel.
And we can travel as much as we want to. And now I wouldn't travel abroad anyway because of all the insecurity. And I'm glad we did as much as we did. You can take a look around the map when you get through to here.
How about your parents? Did they take any vacation that you knew of?
No, because they didn't pile children in a station wagon and travel across country in those days, and they didn't have it. They had entertainment, as I said, in the neighborhood. We'd have neighborhood picnics where they'd go out to. The mother would work all day planning food the day before, you know, and then they'd take it out and eat it in the park. And they'd in the winter they'd get together in the evenings, you know, and maybe play some cards or talk, and the children would play games and make candy or popcorn. You know, things like that.
Now, Dad went with us to all over the East in the New York World's Fair in 1939.
Mm-hmm.
But Mother wouldn't go. She liked to stay home. But Dad went with us. And then they went with me several times out to Colorado while Helen was living out there.
Yeah, Mother didn't mind going if she could go and stay put. But she didn't want to be traveling here and every day, you know.
So she came out to visit you then?
Oh, yeah, she was out quite a few times. Yeah, and then this aunt, the wife of his brother, and Mother came out on the train one time to visit me, too, in Colorado. And then in the summer, Francis would drive out with them. So they were out there a lot, and Mother liked it that way.
Because
then she could have the bed for couple of weeks out there, you see, and not have to travel.
Because she could stay put.
She was at ease, and she didn't have to pack a suitcase the next day.
Yeah, that's it.
You mentioned here about the plan or that the family had in the early years. You washed on Monday and iron on Tuesday and bake on Wednesday and so on. Did she follow that schedule all the way throughout her life?
No. What? Now, after we got, then, oh, here's something interesting about Dad, too. When we went, the first washer, electric washer they had, was a washer with a ringer, and the ringer, you could...
Side two.
Then you could turn the wringer around to go here from the suds water into a rinse water that had bluing in it. Then you could turn the wringer this way. See, here was the thing, and you could put it to go here, and then here, and then here. And then it would wring out of that one into the basket.
Did your dad still help?
He didn't have to then.
She took care of herself.
Yeah, because there was no manual work on that. It was electrically done. So then they had that for a long time. And then Francis and I were going away one summer, and it broke down or something. And
this was in the 20s?
No, this was in the 30s, I guess, or 30. I don't know when she got her first automatic one. Anyway, when they were coming in. And so we went around. Mother didn't feel like going, so we went around and looked at the washers, and we decided on one of these automatic ones. You know what they're like. And so we brought the literature home and we showed it to them, and they looked at it. And Mother said, oh, I don't know whether I want that because I can't wash blankets in it. And Dad said, I think we better get another Thor. Thor was the old kind they had. And I looked at him, I said, Dad, if you get another Thor, it'll be just like if you wanted a new car and you went down and brought a Model T. And he looked at me and he said, I guess you're right. So they authorized that we could go in and get this other one, so we did. And then my mother read the instruction books and she found out she could wash blankets in it anyway. We didn't have a dryer at first. And then one time we were going away on a trip and we didn't want to leave her to hang out clothes because she was...
It was harder
and she was short too. And Dad had made a footstool for her when they dried them in the basement in the winter in the furnace room for her to step on. And but anyway, we got the dryer then, and so then after that, why we had everything.
Mm-hmm. So she changed the schedule a little bit, and then
But she usually washed on Monday anyway. Mm-hmm. That was her established things, but she didn't keep other schedule. Now, if you got them out of the dryer, you could iron the same day. You see,
and half the things you don't have to iron.
No.
But she ironed all her life then. She was not used to this drip and dry.
Well, toward the end she was, I guess. But then we were doing the things then. I mean, Francis was, and then I'd come home.
I lived at home because I taught here.
And then I'd come home on vacations. And
Could you tell her at any time that this item is not necessary to iron or anything like that? I mean,
yes, she realized that.
She realized that?
Mm-hmm. Toward the end, I'm sure, didn't she?
Realize what?
That you didn't have to iron like her nightgowns and things if they were nylon.
Because it seems to us now there was so many unnecessary things they did.
Yeah, they were. But she still does unnecessary things.
But you are different. Why are you different now in your opinion then?
I don't know.
You know, the iron and starch, everything like 50 years ago. And then they suddenly find out, you know, there's not necessary to do it. You feel like, what have we been doing?
She's adapted. She wants to use paper napkins. I said, we've got all these linen napkins, and nobody wants them after we're gone, so we might as well use them.
Yeah, but then you have to iron them.
Then you have to iron them. But we don't use them very often, but once in a while.
And when we travel, I picked up a lot of paper napkins. So I've got a whole stack of paper napkins in one of the cupboards in the kitchen. I said, we better use them up.
You know, you see pretty boxes from different countries. Yes, right. And yes. I had some from Norway. We were there awfully pretty. And and different things like that, so we buy them.
I bought some cute little ones in Alaska last summer when we were in Alaska. I said that was the only state we hadn't traveled in, so we had to go before we got any older, so we went to Alaska last August.
You see, we would go every summer and take a different section of our country and see it thoroughly.
And you read up on it then before you, you left.
And I always did that planning. And I said to her, she planned the Oberammergau trip.
And also the Eastern Europe, I mean...
No, you said you wanted to go there.
Yeah.
No, I said we'd go there. But she said, after we'd been around quite a bit, and I said, well, I said, I guess we better go back to the British Isles, because we hadn't been there since we were young and had gone on this trip. And she said, oh, we can always go there. That's so close, she said. Let's go someplace more exotic. And so I thought, well, we'd been around the world, we'd been to all over South America and all over Africa and the South Pacific, and I said...
You travel alone then, or with the group?
Well, when we got a three-month Ural pass in Europe, the time we visited our relatives...
Then you traveled alone?
Then we traveled alone. We had a friend who wanted to go with us, so there were three of us. And then... it was 75 we went to the communist countries. We were having sort of detente then, and I said to France, well, the only place we haven't been is the communist countries. So she said, well, that'd be fine. So I went to I had a nice travel agent out there that I knew, and I had her two kids in school and everything. And she, she gave me the brochures, and Travkoa was the only country that gave a long enough trip. It was 52 days in the communist country where we could cover all except Albania, of course, and we could get out into the countryside. I don't want to just see the big cities, because they're more or less alike any place. Not entirely, but, you know, similar. So we took that one in 75, and she went along. Then in 70, we were over in Europe on our own. But, of course, I knew we couldn't go to Oberammergau. We went, but, I mean, I knew we wouldn't get tickets.
We'd get tickets.
We just went there to look it over. And... so Frances said, well, I think we ought to go to that. So in 80, she signed up with the First Methodist Church, some people we knew that were going with them. So that's the only one.
We went on that trip then.
And then she's the one that insisted on going to Alaska.
Well, you haven't been there yet?
Yeah, well, last August.
Last August we were there, because I said that's the only state we hadn't traveled in, so we must go.
And I told her a long time ago, oh, I've seen ghost towns and mining towns in Colorado, and we've seen fjords in Norway and in New Zealand, and I said, what will we see that's different? We've seen beautiful scenery other places. And she said, well, it's the only state we haven't been in, and we're going, and I'm going, I said, well, you get a roommate and go with somebody else. Well, I finally gave in then and said, well,
I knew she'd end up going.
So how did you find it then? Was it
I'm glad we went. I enjoyed it tremendously. We met the group in Seattle, and everything was taken care of from there on. And it was really very interesting.
And now in our old age, we like to travel that way.
Yeah.
Somebody else does all the work, and we just enjoy it.
Now you can use the napkins you picked up, you know, in different places.
Yeah. Well, you know, we would travel in the summertime in this country and take our sleeping bags, because we belong to the Black Hawk Hiking Club. Do you know that? Do you live around here?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I know about it.
You know that. Oh. And so we went all over the country to national parks with them, and that was cheap. Because we'd cook over an open fire, and we got a lot of good hiking in and seeing. So then we'd go on our own and take our sleeping bags and go to areas that we hadn't been with the hiking club and sleep out.
How does the climate affect, you know, when you come back from the high altitude out in Colorado?
It doesn't affect me. When I first went out there, though, my ears nearly broke. When I first went out there, when I got the job, I went out with a friend who said, let's take this trip, and we went by train out, and we took the cog road. No, we took the touring car up to the top of Pikes Peak, and we went up for sunrise. And I tell you, coming down, you see, that was pretty quickly after we left here, and I thought my eardrums were going to break. And then I learned to yawn, and I yawned, and I felt them cracking, because we went up early, you know. And so then I learned that that's what you do.
You stayed there 52 years.
51 and a half.
Your dad and Marino, did they belong to any Swedish organizations here in the in the Quad Cities, like Vasa, Viking, Switzerland. You never heard of those?
You see, Mother wasn't Swedish, and
he belonged to the Moose Lodge.
Well, that was for insurance, I think, and they got medical too for us through the Moose. They had a doctor. So that, but that wasn't
Swedish.
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 No.
So did he go down to Augustana, for instance, for any doings they had there, your parents?
I don't think when we were young, not when we were kids.
Midsummer festivals and Lucia.
I don't think they had them then. I don't know. The Midsummer's been more the recent decades.
We've been to some of those later.
Yeah, but I mean, they weren't there when we were. When we were growing up, I don't think they had them. It was just developing then too, I guess.
So you had an interesting life. You have put in two cultures, British and Swedish. How about tea now, for instance, your mother? Was she a tea drinker?
Yes, and we don't drink coffee.
Well, you don't drink
and Mother never drank coffee till she married Dad, and then she'd drink coffee for breakfast to keep him company. And but we never liked Francis liked coffee when you were real little and shouldn't have it. But I never did like the taste of coffee.
And now I don't even like it.
We
and our brothers and Dad drank coffee, and Helen and I and Mother drank tea.
Did you have a special hour the other day you took a cup of tea?
No, we don't snack between
not
meals.
Not in the middle time.
No?
Just for meals.
You had it after the meal and with the meal?
With the meal.
With the
tea.
Meal.
I like
it
with
the meal.
I see. So that's sure. Oh, I'm sorry. So that's the way it's done. And then you have, at the first, holidays, you have plum pudding. So did you learn how to do all this cooking, your mother?
Mother taught some. Well, when I was in college and I decided I better get a job for the summer, I came home and I said to Mom, I'm going to let you have vacation this summer and I'm going to do all the cooking. Before that, she did the meat, you know, and things like that. We'd fix salads and set the table and do things like that. And so she said, I said, I'm going to learn how to do the meats and things, and so I'll do the cooking. Well, she had everything baked up over the weekend. I was going to start Monday. Well, Monday there was enough leftovers, roast beef I could warm up and things. And Tuesday, then I made cream coconut pudding, or cream coconut pie, because that was my favorite pie at that time.
It was a dessert then.
Yeah, that was dessert. And I said, now you stay out on the front porch. I'm going to do it all myself. And I got a recipe book out. And so she was sitting out on the front porch, and I got this, and I thought, now I know that the secret of good pie dress is lots of shortening, I thought, see. So I put heaping. And then I took a little bit extra too. So I had about three times as much. And I couldn't get it into the pan hardly, so I patted it. And then I put it in the oven, and it didn't seem to be baking. It just looked like grease. And finally, I had to call Mother, and I said, I don't know what's happened, but the crust just looks like a mess of grease. She came in and said, oh, you can't use that. And here I had the filling already started, you know, the cream coconut custard. And I was so crestfallen, and she said, we'll just put it in sherbet glasses and call it cream coconut pudding. So we did that. And my brothers said, I said, what's this? And I said, cream coconut pudding. He said, is it like the pie? They didn't know how much like it was. Well, then Mother gave it away a few days later because they came in and began to tease us. And then there was an ad in the paper for somebody in the millinery department at the New York store, and I thought, well, then I can get a job down there. So I went down and I just about had the job. The head of the department interviewed me, and then she said, this will be permanent, won't you? And I said, well, for a while. And she said, what do you mean? I said, I'm going back to college in the fall. And she said, oh, I couldn't train anybody in for just the summer. And so I saw another friend who in there that, and she said, oh, they're taking inventory now, and they're hiring high school girls to take that. And so she said, go and see Mr. Yeager. So I went to see him, and I thought by this time I better toot my own horn if I'm going to get a job. So he said, he thought they had all they needed, but for figuring they could use some, and they were just counting then. And he said, how are you figuring? And I said, accurate and fast. He said, are you fast? And I said, yes, and I'm accurate too, because I was good in math. So I thought, well, I better brag a little bit. So he hired me. And so we got, and a sorority sister of mine from Augie was hired too. So we got to, after they laid off all the other girls when they got all the counting done, well, then we could work up in an office and count it on things. Well, then a man came in one day when he was out, and he said, and he had a Monroe calculating machine. And they were, if you got a big one, you could put the cost here and the selling price here and then ring up the amount, and you got both things at the same time. Well, this cousin's husband, Walt, had sold those at one time. And so I knew that a little bit about what they could do, because he had shown me. I was always interested in learning anything. And so I said to this man, I said, I know how to run those. and I got him to show me, because I said, maybe I've forgotten. So he showed me how to run it. So when the boss came back, I said, are you going to let me run that machine? And he said, do you know how? And I said, yes. So here I got to stay on until all that was done. And he raised my the first week we got $7 a week, mind you, $1 a day. So he raised me to 8 and then 10. And I think before the summer was over, I was getting $12 a week. And I was saving enough to go to Michigan, I guess, then. Well, anyway, then when I came home, then when I started to teach, they wanted me. And the Monroe calculating people had their offices in Devonport. And by that time, the stores were sending their sheets over there to be figured. And they wanted me to work. Well, I had just come home for Christmas. I wasn't going to spend my time. And I was getting a salary of my own then. So I said, well, I couldn't do it anymore.
So there were a lot of opportunities if you
grab it. But you see, you have to be a go-getter.
No, you have to grab it.
Yeah.
Well, you could have taken the first job, of course, say, you know, sure, I want to stay on steady, and then left after 3 months.
Yeah, well, I'm not a liar, though. I'm not a liar.
When I got my job, there were kids around the neighborhood, and so they'd come and say, will you babysit? So that's what the kind of job I did. And the ordinary people would give me 25 cents, maybe, for an evening, stay with the kids. But then wealthier people, like the Schulzkes lived across here, Lundahl's over here, and the Getzes out here, and they were more wealthy people. And when I stayed with their kids, I'd get 25 cents an hour. So that was good.
Well, you sat for evenings, then, or in the daytime, too?
Sometimes, once in a while. In the
whenever
daytime.
They needed her. In the summertime, in the daytime, she could do it.
Even when Bud Lundahl was
10 or 11?
10, 11, 12. Why, if Mrs. Lundahl went away, she'd have me go over and sit in the house because his kids, you know, would come in and play, but she wanted an adult anyway in the house.
Was that a Lundahl that had the toy factory down there?
Hmm?
Was this the same Lundahl that had a...
Who made the Buddy L toys? Yeah. And Buddy it was Buddy that sat with.
They lived right over here on the corner. Uh-huh. And he was about 10 years younger than I was. And he died, you know, a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And
then you know the Getz family. She was in Ainsworth, you know.
The Republican.
Bill Getz.
Bill. She sat with him over here, and they had a chauffeur and.
So she became a Republican then.
She was a Republican.
Why they hire you.
Dad was a Republican.
He was a Republican. Uh-huh.
And mother, during Roosevelt's term, she liked his fireside chats and his vote, so she wanted to vote for him. And so then when election day came, and I said, are you going to vote? No, she said, Dad will vote Republican, and if I vote, I'll just kill his. So he didn't even vote.
He didn't vote?
Dad didn't. I mean, Dad voted, but Mother didn't, because she thought if she voted for Roosevelt, and he voted for Hoover or whoever was running, why then they would... she'd kill his vote.
But she was a good Republican.
Yeah, later on.
We were all good Republicans.
So this was a Republican neighborhood then, Lundahl's?
No, not now.
Most of them were
Democrats.
I mean at that time.
At that time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But now all our neighbors are, some of them are factory people, and fell across the alley as a highway cop,
patrol,
all different.
They're all Democrats.
Uh-huh.
And Linda and Beatty Asmus are Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether, maybe Earls are too. And I think Coverstone's next door here vote Republican now. Because I was drafted in working at the polls, so once in a while I work at the on election day.
I see.
And so I know what the neighbors do when they call in primary, when they call for a Democrat, a Republican ballot.
Totally for it. This Buddy L, now where does this come from, Bud? Was there a nickname of
him? His name was Arthur.
Arthur.
And they called him Buddy when he was little.
Buddy.
Uh-huh. And then Buddy L stands for Buddy Lundahl, you see, the toys that they make.
Oh,
but they don't make them anymore,
I guess.
And there
are no one of their relation left?
Well, his wife and children are living.
The one that she babysat with,
his wife and children are living. Uh-huh. But they sold that house a long time ago, and she went into an apartment before she died, the mother.
The mother lived to be about 87 or 88, and Bud died at 65. And he was an only child, but he wasn't a spoiled child. He was an awfully nice kid to stay with. And I say a lot of these kids were just about 10 years younger than I was.
His wife, was she Swedish?
I don't think so. And
I don't know, maybe in the past, you don't know when it gets several generations, you don't know. and then they marry, you know, like my nephew's wife. Her father, I guess, was Irish, wasn't he? And her mother was French. Her grandmother couldn't even speak English. Then her oldest daughter married a man who from Czechoslovakia, who had also German blood in him. And so their little boy, their 7-year-old boy, has everything. Well, that's a melting pot.
That's right. That's the way that
their ancestors all came from these different countries.
Yeah.
But that's what makes good stock.
That's right. I believe that. It's good.
Yeah, because look at the royal families, how they intermarried and then their diseases would go down.
Yeah. So now when you traveled, you had no problem with the language. You speak French.
She can speak French and
German,
French and
Spanish.
Spanish.
And just a little bit of German. I tried to learn some Swedish and somebody gave me record. In Colorado Springs, they had in a big bookstore there, they had even Vietnamese languages and the Middle Eastern languages, because that was for our army, don't you see, our military. But no Swedish, because Swedish isn't spoken outside Sweden, and so it's not used much. So somebody bought me one in Rockford, you know, that's quite a Swedish. And I could say, please drive me to the Grand Hotel, things like that. I learned off the record. But I couldn't really carry on. But you know, I learned an awful lot. When you know some languages, and it comes easy for me anyway, and I...
When you were traveling, tell me about that.
So one time we were in Stockholm, and I wanted some more hot water for my tea. And the waitress couldn't, you know, they speak English so much in Sweden, so we didn't have much trouble. But this waitress didn't know what I meant when I said, could I have some more hot water? And so then I thought, well, on that record, it said, jag behöver, I need. And so I had picked up a few words, so I said, jag behöver. I didn't know how to say we need, but I said jag, and then we could point to the rest of them. Mer varm vatten på det te. And she understood me. And her face lighted up, she brought the hot water. So that encouraged me. Well, then we were up at... on Lake Siljan, what was that name in that? Mora?
Mora.
We went up there to see, you know, the crab, the things, and we had a rail pass, and we could go any place. And we got a room, and the woman, no, that was in, we went out to the Orifice factory, and the little town of Orifice, they didn't have any hotel or anything. But they had a pension up by the on the highway, and so the girl could speak English, but her mother couldn't. And she went up. They so often in Sweden they have twin beds, and then they have a day bed. They can make up if there's a third one. And there was a friend of ours with us. Her father was Swedish too, but they were dad, her mother and father. Her mother was Scotch-Irish. And so anyway, the mother was making up this third bed. And I wanted to thank her because I said to the girl, do you serve dinner? And she said, no, just breakfast. And I said, well, we haven't had anything since lunch. Could you fix us just a sandwich and a pot of tea? Because, you know, they have these good sandwiches. And she said, well, I'll ask the mother. So she went out of the kitchen and she came back and said, yes. So while the mother was making up, we were eating and they had a nice sandwich, you know, with cheese and meats and things and hot tea. So that's all we needed. And I said, so I wanted to tell the woman. So I said, Taksamikat po det te. I'm pretty limited. Det er bra. And she understood. Now, I know I wasn't speaking very well, but she understood. And she rattled off a whole paragraph in Swedish, and I didn't understand one word, but I smiled and I said, yeah, yeah. So that's how I got by.
You got your dinner, too.
Yeah. But she gets along with Spanish and French quite well.
Mm-hmm.
I had Latin and French in high school and Spanish in college. But you know, you don't have any opportunity to use it. I don't have a flair for languages like she does anyway, so you forget it all.
No. But well, you've been living, you've been, have been able to use it out there.
Well, I learned Spanish out there, and I belong to an AUW, you know, AUW, American mm-hmm. Association of University Women, and I belong to a conversation Spanish group. Well, first she was teaching, it was one of the teachers in the schools that taught our class, and I learned some of the grammar and things like that. Then finally there were some other Spanish people there that were well educated, and they joined our group through other friends, so we became unaffiliated with AUW. But the French group remained affiliated with AUW, and when we had some outside speakers who weren't members, like the Air Force Academy's there, and they had the liaison officer from France who'd be there, and his wife would be along, and then some of the officers there had lived in France during our occupation and things, or Europe, and they spoke French, the wives did. So they were members, though. So anyway, the French would meet once a month. Well, you don't get much there, but it kind of brought back some of mine. And then the Spanish, we met once a week if enough people could come. And so then you get a little more once a week. And I got, so when I was in South America, I did very well. Mm-hmm. And in Spain too.
So you've really been covering the earth. Mm-hmm. Now you know it's round, or is it still flat?
What?
Is it still flat, you think, or is it?
Oh, yes. Yes, and well, I guess around the world proved it, didn't it? Because we left from New York and came into San Francisco.
And there's more woods than forest down to Monmouth.
Yeah. Oh, then this uncle, they, as I say, they had more money because they only had one child. And they had a car early. They went out to San Francisco and bought a new Studebaker out there, 7-passenger, and came back with it and camped on the way. They went through the mountains. They had to have an extra horn then to toot, you know, if they came to a place. And it was, that was 1950. They didn't have all these roads then. But anyway, from that time on, we didn't have to ride in that little rumble seat. We could all go in the big 7-passenger car.
He was quite old, though. Both of them were old. 1865? You mean
1950?
Yeah,
1915.
Oh, 15. 1915.
Now, 50, they had roads better.
Yeah, they were one because 50. He died in 46.
Yeah, they were 1915.
I see.
And so then all of us
so
could go.
He took a long ride out there to San Francisco.
Uh-huh. But it was a really kind of a pioneering experience.
It must have been.
Uh-huh.
So we could get 9 people in a 7-passenger car.
Because 3 could ride in front and 3 in back, and they put a board across these 2 jump seats, so we 3 girls, Frances and I and their daughter Elna, could sit on those seats, and the women with 1 boy in the back and the men with 1 boy in the front.
And you camped outside and every...
No. But that's the way we'd go down to Monmouth for these 2 brothers to visit this brother.
Oh.
And we'd make an all-day trip of it, you see, in those days.
Yes. And you took 67 down then, or?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we took a route that had black and orange rings around the telephone posts and the fence posts. It was that kind. And we came to a detour, and there was a real steep hill, and Mother said, "Oh, let me out."
They call that area Dogtown. You remember?
Yeah, but I think it was another place for this, because then there was the woods beyond it on this detour. And I remember I wrote a theme for school afterwards about this exciting trip, this steep hill and going through the woods
really
that was dark.
Even today it's down there really hilly.
Yeah, but they grade them off to make the hard road, so.
I know. I remember Mom wanted to get out and walk one time. She was scared of it.
And there was no hard top then. It was all soft.
No.
Uh-huh. So you have had your experiences from the beginning.
Oh, we enjoyed our trip in Sweden, though. We spent about four weeks in Sweden, I guess, and then we spent...
How about your two brothers now, Cecil and Clifford? Were they also adventurous and...
No, not so much.
Did they stay in this
And area? They stayed here, and they didn't even want to go to college. This meat market up there, they began working when they were... Cecil did when he was about 14, and you could drive then without a license, and he'd deliver in their little truck, and when the street in front would be a sheet of ice, he'd come down and put on the brakes and knew just how to swing it around in front.
They learned the meat cutting trade.
Yeah, so then they learned the meat cutting trade and became meat cutters.
Mm-hmm. And Clifford managed a meat department.